As a year-round resident of Martha's Vineyard for decades, Laura Wainwright has had the opportunity to participate in the seasonal rituals and events that comprise life on the vineyard, as well as observe its many inhabitants. She's written essays touching on the human and natural elements of her world that evoke profound pleasure and poignant reflection. Joining us in studio to talk about her book, Homebird, Four Seasons on Martha's Vineyard, is Laura Wainwright. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Now, your book is titled Homebird. So can you describe what that means to you and why you chose that title?
Actually, the title was one of the very last pieces of the book to fall together. I am a homebody, and I was looking it up in the dictionary, and my dictionary was English, and I came upon a synonym in the English dictionary is home bird. Mm. And I thought, oh my God, that suits me perfectly. And what I really appreciate about the difference in the American definition of a home bird and an English definition is in the English dictionary, a home bird is described as someone who likes to stay at home. And in the American dictionary, it's described as a person who does not like to go out or travel.
Oh, interesting.
And there's a really big difference.
Yeah.
And as a home bird, as I wrote in one of the essays, it's that I find special delight in the comfort, nourishment, and complexity of my life at home.
Mm.
I love to go out and travel.
Right. But you like home too.
Yes.
So your book starts with the season that people probably most associate with the vineyard, which is summer. Your first essay in the book is about a ritual many of us undertake in the summer here on the Cape and Islands, swimming. But instead of talking about the sand and the waves of the beach, you talk about the trail to your swimming spot and the countless other creatures that also use that well-worn path. Mm.
That's true. And I think the first essay you're describing is called Evening Watch. And usually I'm in the kitchen cooking. But one night I was home alone and sat out on the porch with a glass of wine and watched a deer at the bottom of the field take the path I've always thought of as ours to the beach. And it just completely changed my perspective. You know, I knew because I'd watched my own children run that path exactly where she'd disappear and where she'd reappear. But watching her made me realize how small my view was. And I started to wonder who else traveled this path.
And thought of it as theirs.
Yes.
So a large portion of the book is devoted to food, not just gardens, cooking, and recipes, which we'll get into, but foraging for food. I think many readers will be astonished at the number of different foods that can be found on the vineyard. Can you talk about some of your favorite foods to forage in the summer?
Well, probably my favorite foods become ready in the at the end of the summer. Mm-hmm. Early on, I love to clip the watercress, and that's in the spring. I love to find beach plums. They miraculously grow right out of the sand. And some years are good, and you're just amazed, and some years there's none. I love to pick the berries that grow alongside the dirt roads, the raspberries, blackberries. I'm trying to learn more about the Russian olives that people are really enjoying making into sherbets and the wild cherries. But I stick to the things that maybe are the easiest to work with.
Right. So you remind us that foraging for personal consumption and for profit are two different things. So what are the perils of the larger scale foraging? And is this an issue on the vineyard? Because you're not the only one who forages there. There's lots of people who do it sort of personally. But
foraging is a big part of life on the vineyard. And I mentioned the things you could pick on the land. But, you know, every week my husband is scraping up scallops or clams or oysters. And it's true that as more people become interested in it, you have to be a little protective.
Mm-hmm.
I describe in one of the essays being upset by seeing a man coming down the path with two big buckets of beach plums to turn into jelly that would be sold. But on the other hand, people make their way living year-round on the vineyard however they can. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people are working 4 or 5 jobs. So, you know, I got off my high horse about that.
We're talking with Laura Wainwright. Her book is Homebird, 4 Seasons, on Martha's Vineyard. You also include an essay about a ritual common for many year-round vineyarders, renting out your home for a period of time in the summer. I think that's true on both islands. It's true on the Cape. But your essay on renting has an unexpected twist.
Well, I rented to an old boyfriend, and that was a little uncomfortable because did I really want to invite that energy back into my own bed? But it turned out that he was the perfect person to rent to because he's a scientist, and we had bats in our basement, which when you know, a realtor just came actually very recently. And when I said, well, we still happen to have some bats in our base, she said, you're kidding. And I feel very tenderly towards the bats, yeah, especially given the epidemic.
I was
here
funny
in
as you
New
were saying
England.
That. I love bats myself. And I was thinking, well, you know, maybe that's, you want to leave them there just because there's so many that are dying. It's, yeah.
I wouldn't even consider not having them there. But for this boyfriend, that was a huge plus.
A plus.
Because we had actually studied bats together in college.
Oh, how funny.
And even taken several trips to Jamaica collecting bats for scientific research. But what I hadn't counted on was he would think the ticks were also a plus because he's an epidemiologist at Yale University. And when, you know, right before he came, I knew it was a really... You know, I wanted to say, well, we do have the bats, but the ticks aren't that bad. And he was like, rats. I wanted to bring scientists down to collect ticks.
Oh, that's funny.
So it was funny.
Another topic you touch on is balance. This becomes especially important in the summer when there seems to be so much going on, house guests, social events, how hectic everything becomes. Describe some of your favorite summertime ways to rebalance when everything's so crazy.
Probably there are 2 ways. One that I write about is swimming. And I surprise myself in the summer because as the shore gets more crowded, I turn to the inland ponds, which are still, I don't even want to say the name of one, you know, but they're still
spots,
a little
right?
bit of a secret.
Yeah.
And it's a place where you can find yourself alone. Mm-hmm. And also the same is true for inland walks, of which the vineyard has so many. And that's a time, even in the summer, that you can find yourself on a path completely alone. Yeah. So I guess I'm saying that it's the solitude and the activity.
Right. You include recipes in your book. Some of them are your own. Some are from friends and others are from favorite cookbooks. What they all have in common is that they can be made from ingredients found on the vineyard. We're getting back to that foraging thing. Have you always been a locavore or has living on the vineyard inspired you in that way?
That's a really good question. I think it was moving to the vineyard, even before we moved there full time in the mid-70s. Foraging was very popular then, but it was also a way of life for many of the people that I was meeting on the vineyard. There was nothing trendy about it. Mm-hmm. It was just something you did to have fun and also a way to put food into your freezer or on your shelf. So I think I started just for the pleasure of it.
Mm. And but really, I think people would be surprised at how much is available. I mean, how much...
Really is a ton available. And I only have scratched the surface of it. Mm-hmm. There's an event, an annual event on the vineyard, the Wild Food Challenge, that's happened for the last 3 years. And the range of foods that people have put together for that, from making their own salt to catching a fish and then smoking it. And you should come over for that.
Yeah,
it's
should.
Very Sounds, inspiring.
Yeah. some of the recipes that people might find appealing in the book, white bean and striped bass stew. You've got eggnog, spiced wild grape jelly. How did you decide which recipes to include?
That's a really good question. I think the ones that came into the book were connected to stories that had more heft to them. Mm-hmm. I certainly had done other articles for the Martha's Vineyard Times that were about food, but they were a little two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. Also, I think these are my favorite recipes. The striped bass stew is outstanding. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend and very easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not an elaborate cook. I wasn't very much of a cook at all as a young girl. So an old friend, you know, when she read the book for the first time, said, "You have to admit, Laura, it's funny that you have a book with recipes in it."
Right.
You know, so I have come a long way. But these are also very simple. And I love to start with things that I can collect or catch myself.
Yeah, local food.
Yeah.
You know it's fresh.
Yeah.
Right. So your book is part memoir, part cookbook. I would even argue part poetry, given your writing style. But you also include research into the natural world. For example, the essay you write about the beginning and the end of the summer season on the vineyard is also about migration patterns of hummingbirds. Did you do research for this book, or did you just find yourself over the course of observing nature, researching along the way?
I wrote the book one essay at a time without an intention of putting them together in a book until much later. I am fascinated by hummingbirds, the example that you use, and I always have a feeder at my house. I can't wait for them to come, and I'm sad when they go. I'm not sure which came first. I would want to learn. I'd observe them and then want to learn more and then write about them, or sometimes I would start writing and realizing I needed to know more about them. I was a librarian for many years. I love to do research. Mm. So it all comes together.
Yeah. So it's a natural curiosity that you have then.
True.
Yeah. Oh. As your book moves into the winter season, you write about a walk on the beach with your dogs. And I think for many folks who don't live year-round here in our region, they don't understand how special a winter walk on the beach is. But your essay describes it perfectly. It's that feeling of being the only human there and being able to see more clearly the artistic quality of the sand, the water, the light, the sky. You going to read this for us?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you. A winter walk. Finally, I was alone at my desk, ready to write. Yet just a single nudge from a soft black muzzle, and I was in the mudroom pulling on my jacket, fumbling for a hat, ready to go. After yesterday's rain and relentless gray, the world seemed washed to glistening, the need to step out, urgent. I watched myself get the dogs into the car, adjust the seat, turn on the ignition, amazed. How had I abandoned my work without any apparent struggle? Hadn't I fought hard for the privilege of sitting in that chair? Was it reading William Faulkner with my morning tea? In a single sentence of Pantaloon in Black, Faulkner said more about love and grief and time and race and humanity than seemed possible. No wonder my page remained blank. I didn't think I had a plan, but the car turned up island at the end of Lambert's Cove Road, veered southwest past alleys into Chilmark, and turned in at the Kwan Su Road. This was no longer the dusty, slow road of August, lined with the big cars of impatient beach key holders. Now the gate leaned open, gesturing a wide welcome for us winter folk. My tire tracks were the first since last night's rain swept the dirt clear. A twist, a turn, a bump or two, and then just sand, shrub, water, and sky, sky, sky. This dormant time is why I live here. This pause, when one season is behind and the preparations for the next have yet to begin. Now islanders can fully explore not the unknown, but the familiar we forget to pay attention to. I park among puddles. The dogs pop out, tails up. There is the footbridge, the creek, and the sandy path slipping up and over the dune. Are there words to describe the sun on Black Point Pond? For a moment, I try to grab for the names of colors, tones, feelings, and then leave it for someone else. Faulkner would know. But for me, it is enough to stand here, saturated by its glory. The turbulent surf and huge waves surprise me as I crest the dune. The hills of sand had muffled the ocean's ferocity. The beach, like the road, is wiped clean by yesterday's weather. Ours are the first tracks belonging to human or dog. I pretend I'm Robinson Crusoe as I mosey along, picking up pieces of peat, a pair of crab claws, and a few white feathers. There's a swirl of shells dumped so exquisitely that I wonder, is there a better artist than the sea itself? By the time we turn back, pushed by sand and wind, I'm singing at the top of my lungs an old ballad about stalking the shore. Too quickly, we're back in the parking lot, where our car waits alone. The wet dogs climb in the back, my treasures go between the seats, and I'm ready for an egg salad sandwich, and even, perhaps, the blank sheet of paper on my desk.
Lovely. That's Laura Wainwright. Her book is Homebird, Four Seasons on Martha's Vineyard. You know, it's you can see yourself on the beach. Any of us here who walk the beach in the winter, and think of all the great treasures you find, as you're mentioning there. You really do in the winter. It's a whole different feeling.
I know. I picked up a sand dollar the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
Which always...
Yeah. You aren't going to find that in the summer for sure. J.N. Eldridge did the illustrations for the book. They're etchings on copper plate that are made into prints. Can you describe how you collaborated with Anne on the book?
That was really a wonderful process. As I worked with Jan Pogue, the editor of Vineyard Stories, to try to put together what the book might look like, I had originally thought of an artist who did botanical drawings. And Jan correctly said, that's not the right feeling for the book. You know, the book isn't that precise. And I went back and thought of artists that I knew or respected. And for several summers, I worked at the Shaw Kramer Gallery in Vineyard Haven, and they represented Anne. And her, not only was her work some of my favorite work there, it was also work I could consider actually owning. It was in my price range. And Jan looked at her work and loved it. But she did the approaching. It was, you know, as a children's librarian, I would often talk to my students about how amazing it was that a picture book could be put together with the writer never knowing the illustrator and not being able to imagine what that would look like. And in a way, that's what happened with this. Anne and I didn't meet until a party for the book last summer. And she came and spent the night, and I really enjoyed her. Yeah. She's got a fascinating, quirky mind, and we had many points of contact. And I love the way that her art complements the book. I had a moment of panic because it's not salty.
Yeah.
Her work is, she lives in New Hampshire. Her work is very freshwater based. But I think the feeling and tone of it fits beautifully.
There's a poignant essay in your book about an estate sale at your next door neighbor's. And the essay starts out, "Bare feet from the same two families have worn down the grass connecting her house and mine for 75 years. Talk a little bit about Carrie and the relationship between your families.
The house that I live in belonged to my husband's parents. They bought it in the late 30s when that was affordable. And a year later, Carrie Lucky and her husband moved next door. And as my husband grew up and Carrie's children grew up, and then they had children, we all trod that same path that the deer trod. And our families are very, very close. My husband and I are godparents to Carrie's grandchildren. And we had many years of a lot of fun. Yeah. Carrie died, and right now there is a substantial house where her old cape once stood.
Right. So the essay also speaks to the notion of the inevitability of change, so much a part of the natural and human world, yet often difficult to accept.
Right? Well, where it is, I do miss her, and I miss her light being on. And it's a big adjustment to have a house next door that's making a statement about itself.
Right.
But I'm trying to stay open-minded. You know, the woman who's building it is friendly. She has dogs. She's, you know.
It's a new relationship.
It yeah. will be.
Yeah. Another significant change you write about is sending your youngest child off to college. You and your husband raised two children on the vineyard, and now they are young adults living off island. So your essay touches on the bittersweetness of empty nest.
Like most things, that story didn't go in a straight line. And actually, after a couple of years, my daughter is back on the vineyard.
Ah.
And she's not living at home. She's living with her boyfriend, but she's a part-time student at Cape Cod Community College. So it didn't have that trajectory I imagined, just like the house next door.
Right. You just never know. Although your book is focused on the vineyard, you also include childhood experiences in the natural world with your father. His method for cooking scallops or early morning duck hunting trips with him. It seems as though our culture has really changed in the last generation. Fewer people are interacting with the natural world on a regular basis, and even fewer people are growing, raising, or hunting for their food. I would say maybe the vineyard's a little bit ahead of people in that area, that you probably do a little more of that in the vineyard than a lot of other places. So what are your thoughts on how this disconnect with the natural world might impact us down the road?
It's something that I really worried about as a teacher and as a parent. I feel like one of the great gifts my own mother gave me was, you know, when I came home from school, I was told to go outside and play. Mm-hmm. And I didn't always want to, and it was sometimes raining. But thanks to that, I developed a very deep relationship with the natural world. And it's not a relationship that I think my own children have, even though I've urged them in perhaps a less forceful but no less passionate way. I've read the book, I'm sure you know about, To the Last Child in the Woods.
Absolutely. And I was thinking of it as I was asking the question.
And I do know that you love what you know. And I worry that if people don't make those connections, I don't even know how to talk about it, actually. It's so, I feel it so deeply, but I don't have the right word. I don't have the words for it.
Yeah. So to give advice to people, how to, you know, stop and appreciate the special place. I mean, we take a lot of things for granted, but when you really, like when we hear your essays, or the same thing with Bob Finch, who does, you know,
I love
Cape Cod Notebook. All of a sudden, you know, you're hearing his observations, or was it reading a book, your observations, and it makes you stop and think and go, well, I have to take notice of this more often.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really do need to sort of look around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of the Cape Cod Notebook, I was listening to that last night, and I was really surprised to be affected so deeply by it, because he was talking about Washington Street in Boston and the shopping mall and appreciation for that, and I thought, oh, this opening up and paying attention can go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned the bats. You also had a family of skunks that took up residence in your basement. And you write about the bats and the skunks. So a lot of this is really just learning to all live together, right?
I think so. I mean, I did draw the line at the skunks.
Yeah, I could see that.
But there's a lot of give and take.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So what's your favorite season?
Usually it's the one I'm in.
Good answer.
I mean, I do love the particular spaciousness of winter. But let's face it, I love to be warm and have my feet in sand and
All the seasons have their pros and cons, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the book is called Homebird, Four Seasons on Martha's Vineyard, essays by Laura Wainwright. Laura, thanks for sharing your essays with us and coming in and talking about it. Appreciate that.
Thanks so much for inviting me, and I hope you like the cranberry walnut pie.
I can't wait to try it. The recipe's in the book. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.